This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. Joining me is Lee Tree Lin. Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran is here for the final show of the year, and we're going to take a look back at the stories we've covered over 2016, as well as address some of the news that local councils have been making across the state in the last month. Rajiv, welcome for the last time in 2016.
Hi, it's good to be back.
Before we get to the specific questions that we've got lined up, especially for the rest of the year, I think it's safe to say that 2016 has been a tumultuous year. Everybody's felt it. We're still feeling it in the ringgit. And I thought, since it is our last show of the year with you, it's fitting to ask, what has your impression been like of 2016? When you talk about it next year, or when you look back on it, how has it been?
Yeah, it's been tough. It's been tough. It's been a roller coaster ride. It's been a stressful year. And I certainly hope 2017 will be better. I'm optimistic that we can see some improvements in 2017, especially in Selangor. I'm not too sure about things at the federal level, but at least in Selangor, we've got a lot of good things planned for the people. Our MB has announced in the budget speech last month a whole range of goodies and things and projects to be implemented in Selangor. So, hopefully that will improve quality of life for all of us in different ways. And I'm hoping for a better 2017. We also might see the elections. I think that may be a very exciting time ahead in the next few months.
Exciting is a great word to use for that.
It is.
And listeners, if you have any question, our phone lines are open. You can call 7710-9000. You can text us at 016-201-9000. Or if you're more social media inclined, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So Rajiv, you wanted to start things off in this show by highlighting this entity in this Selangor State Government called Select Committee and the role it plays in governments. What is a Select Committee?
All right. So I think we're going to talk about something that's not commonly talked about in Malaysian politics and Malaysian news, but is somewhat important, in my opinion. Select committees are committees made out of assemblymen or members of parliament who are not part of the ruling government. Now, in every parliament, British-style parliaments, like what we have in Malaysia, you have a number of member of parliaments that will become the government. Your prime minister comes from one of the members of parliament. His cabinet comes from members of parliament. And whoever is left behind are basically the backbenchers and the opposition. So I'm sure you would have heard of the term backbenchers club. That's basically the ruling party's members of parliament who are not part of the cabinet. And then you've got the opposition members. So select committees are basically made out of the BBCs, the backbencher club members, as well as the opposition members. And they exist to study a specific topic in detail and to make recommendations to the government. So if you look at Malaysia, the most famous select committee is the Public Accounts Committee, PAC. We have seen so much of news about PAC, especially at the parliament level. You hear a lot about its investigations of 1MDB in the last 1 year. So basically, the select committee can meet as often as it wants. It is not headed by a member of cabinet. It's always headed by either a backbencher or opposition member. And they can investigate just about anything under their purview, and they can go into as deep as they want on any topic. So yes, in Malaysia, it exists both at parliament level and at the state level. In parliament, we just have one select committee, the Public Accounts Committee. In most states in Malaysia, we just have the one select committee. But Selangor is, I would say, the leader in the country, because we have 10 committees in Selangor. So we've got local government committee, we've got select committee on GLCs, we've got select committee on land offices, we've got select committee on poverty, and a number of other issues. So these select committee members, in their respective committee, will spend time studying topics under their purview.
Who decides what to study in these select committees?
All right. So I think maybe we should go to the, who sets up the select committees in the first place. So typically, it's the Speaker of the House. So we have seen since 2008, our former Speaker, Dato' Teng Chiang Kim, and then continued on by Hannah Yeo. They have been very proactive in setting up the select committees and putting members into them. Members typically reflect the composition of the House. So if you got a 60-40 balance of government and opposition, then your select committee will also be 60-40 government opposition members in that balance. And this tends to be the practice worldwide. So it's quite a normal practice. But to your question of what the select committee decides to spend its time on, it's up to its own members. So led by the chairman of the committee, the members then, you know, they decide what to spend time on. And it's very important to choose the right thing to spend on, because every committee has a million possible topics at its disposal. So let's take like the select committee on local government. There's like literally a million things you could investigate and look into. So how do you choose what to investigate? This lies with the wisdom of its members. So in Selangor, we have 7 members per committee. So the 7 people have to decide, hopefully intelligently, what they look into.
And have you been involved in any select committees? What has it been like?
Yes. I have been involved in select committees. Now, I was in the PAC committee when I first became a state assemblyman. And that was for a year plus. And then later, I moved on to the select committee on a local government as well as select committee on water. So I currently still sit on these 2 committees, the select committee on local government and the select committee on water. So we don't run the government departments. That is for the cabinet to run. That's for the exco's to run at the state level. But what we do is we have the authority to call up any officer related to our scope of work and to investigate any issue that we feel necessary, and then to make recommendations to the government.
So for your part then, I mean, not everybody is an expert on everything. And like you pointed out, you can have 100,000 million different topics that you want to focus on as a select committee. So once that direction's been decided, how much time is then spent by its individual members kind of really familiarizing themselves with what it is that they need to investigate?
Well, that's a good question. I think it depends on the topic. So there are some topics where we don't spend too much time on. Maybe, you know, may spend just a few hours on it. And there are some topics that we have continuous discussions over a few months deliberating the matters. Now, there is a great need to do homework. As member of the select committee, you've got to do your reading up before that. But you know, knowing how to ask the right questions, because you've got a lot of resource people at your disposal. You know, all the officers from the relevant departments are at your disposal. So you've got a lot of resource people. It's the intelligence to know how to ask the right question to get the information that you need. So let's look at like the select committee on water. We have investigated how the state government has been managing the water situation in Selangor. We have also constantly call for a briefing to hear the updates on the construction of water treatment plants, to hear updates on the water projects, the water infrastructure projects that are going on. And through getting these briefings, we get to identify if there's any shortcomings or anything that we should be worried about, and then make recommendations out of that. So this is a very important process. Now, it is not one that is always in the newspaper. In fact, in Malaysia, it's never published. Reporters just don't pick up things like this. So most of the listeners out there, you probably wouldn't have heard much coming out of select committees, because the newspapers in Malaysia, by and large, don't pick up on what they do. But it is very important for select committees to function, because by being that check and balance, the first part is you keep everyone on their toes. You know, every department knows that there's someone overseeing, watching, and can investigate them at any time. The second thing is you have more eyes looking at an issue and thinking about how best to solve it and making recommendations to the government. So these are additional roles paid by state assemblymen that typically are not visible to the public. Most of the public is visible to the times when we do public dialogue sessions, when we attend functions, weddings, funerals, gotong royongs. That is definitely the far more visible part of our job. We appear in newspaper far more often on local issues, traffic problems, flooding problems in our area, new projects, new upgrades, new bridges in our area. That seems to be the culture in Malaysian media over the last 50 years. But hopefully, I'm hopeful, it'll be my wish list for 2017 that the media gives a bit more attention to what all the respective select committees in the country has been working on issues that they've been working on, so that this would motivate more members of parliament and state assemblymen to spend time on this, because ultimately it benefits the country. You know, if you got more people looking in on issues, it would highlight more possible solutions. It would put more scrutiny on relevant departments to improve performance.
Is that a priority within the select committee to do that kind of communications? Because, I mean, understandably, it might not be, right? Because there are all these issues. But at the same time, like you said, it is a benefit to actually talk about it.
Yes, it is definitely a benefit. I think the select committees could probably do more to talk about it. At the same time, the media could hopefully be a bit more interested to pick up on it.
Right.
Because it has never become part of culture to pick up on it. So sometimes when various members try to talk about it, it's not quite picked up as much. But, you know, maybe today will be the kickstart of that. We'll be creating some awareness on the fact that select committees exist, and your state assemblyman is doing more than the local projects you see in the kawasan. It is also doing something at the state level.
How many of such select committees exist in the state government, and how much budget is allocated for these committees?
All right. So in Selangor, we don't have... it is not an issue of budget because select committees is more of an issue of time and commitment rather than an issue of money, because it doesn't really cost us much money to operate. We typically call in offices to come in to answer questions, and we also summon documents that we feel are necessary. So money is really not an issue in running select committees. It's basically choosing how much time you want to spend on them. And in this area, you know, I think things are improving. But in Malaysia, a select committee, in Selangor, a select committee may meet about between 5 to 12 times a year, all right, which is a vast improvement over our neighbouring states like Negeri Sembilan, Pahang, Johor, which virtually has no select committees other than the Public Accounts Committee. However, you know, looking forward, I hope we can improve this further. Say, select committee on local government may meet about 10 to 12 times a year in Selangor, but the select committee on local government in UK meets about 30 over times a year. Members of parliament in UK spend a lot more time looking into local government issues. So that's something that we should aspire to improve ourselves. And in fact, other states should emulate us. And this is something that would definitely benefit any government anywhere, having more scrutiny.
I'm speaking today to Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. If you have any question for the Assemblyman, you can call 77109000, you can text 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll do a roundup of the stories that have come from local councils across the state. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Eun Teik. Joining me is Lee Tree Lin. We have Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran in the studio. And before the break, we've been talking about the role select committees play in government. And so I guess we should ask what kinds of results that select committees have produced, right? And if you're listening out there and you see in your neighbourhood something that has not been, or something that is lacking attention, that's something you wish your local councilman would pay more attention to, maybe your basketball court could do with some refurbishing, give us a call. It's 7710-9000. You can text us 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Rajiv.
Well, looks like Christmas has come early. You've opened the floodgates of wish lists. It's all right. But, you know, let's talk a bit about, as you said, the results of select committees. I think it's important that select committees produce results. If not, they're just a waste of time. One of the biggest impacts that I've seen was when the Select Committee on Water did a study on burst pipes in Selangor. So in the beginning of this year, I actually proposed to my fellow committee members that we should look into the number of burst pipes that happen in the state of Selangor and why they're happening and what are we doing to overcome it. And surprisingly, we actually have a very high rate of burst pipes that range from 5,000 to 6,000 cases a year. That's around 100 burst pipes a week, which, you know, it takes anywhere between 2 to 3 hours to a whole day to repair, depending on the complexity of the issue. So the water disruptions to various communities are there whenever a pipe bursts, and we need to do something about it. So arising from that investigation, we then proposed to the state government to speed up pipe replacement works, to use part of our government reserves. Now, in our previous show on the budget, we talked about, you know, having built up our budget reserves over the last 8 years. So we recommended that the state quickly use these budget reserves to start pipe replacement works. Now, in every other state in Malaysia, pipe replacement works are considered CAPEX works and are funded by PAAB, the Pengurusan Asset Air Berhad, and we just heard that being mentioned over the break just now. So PAAB basically loans the money to every state to do the pipe replacement works because they're very costly. It's on average about R1 million a kilometre. In Selangor, we have 28,000 plus kilometres of pipe. So we need to start replacing pipes in hotspots where they're very frequent pipe bursts. And we've identified 84 hotspots in our investigation that need urgent attention. But unfortunately, due to this ongoing water restructuring, we're having a lot of difficulties getting the cooperation of the federal government. PARP has not been coming up with the money for Selangor to start. But because of this investigation and us making the recommendations, it yielded results when our MB had announced spending money. In fact, in next year's budget, we're going to be spending R100 million from our reserves to start the works, start the pipe replacement works. Now, when the money from PARP comes in later, we can improve the speed of pipe replacement works. But until then, we are starting it. So I think that's one of the results that we can see. Another result is we recommended that some small treatment plants should be constructed while waiting for Langat 2 to be constructed to fill in some short gaps, especially in the southern part of Selangor. And from these recommendations, we see the Labuhan Dagang and the Semeni 2 water treatment plant being built right now. So this kind of scrutiny, this kind of recommendations, not every single recommendation made by committees are accepted. But from time to time, recommendations are accepted and translated into action. And this is the absolute reason why we have select committees. Now, this is not a Malaysia thing. It's actually quite an international thing. Pretty much every first world parliament, first world democracy, would have select committees looking into various issues. So my hope is that, you know, parliament emulates Selangor. Parliament currently only has the public accounts committee. That's not enough. Having just one committee to look at anything, everything the government does through one PAC committee is just simply not enough. We should have a select committee for every government ministry, you know, one for environment, one for education, one for transportation, and let members of parliament who sit on it study the various problems that we face and make recommendations to the government. Now, in Selangor, whatever recommendations that we make to the government cannot just nod their head and like, okay, noted. That's not good enough. In fact, we started off just by giving recommendations many years ago. But last year, we amended the rules in the State Assembly that in the following State Assembly sitting, after we give the recommendations, the government must give us a feedback update on what they've done. So when we give our recommendations in January and then, you know, oh, sorry, when we give feedback in the beginning of the year, by mid-year, the government has to report to the State Assembly that, okay, we have rejected this recommendation and this is the reason why. Maybe there's some other considerations that the committee may, a committee may not have taken into account in making the recommendations. So sometimes recommendations are rejected. And other times they will say, okay, we have accepted this and this is what we have done to implement your recommendation. So having this feedback mechanism is priceless. So, you know, the government, the chief minister, the EXCO members are held to account to respond to the work done by these select committees. Now, I only wish we can see that in Parliament. The Select Committee on Transportation makes a recommendation, will make recommendations to the minister, and we can see the minister having to respond on various issues like why isn't there a single transportation ticket for public transport in Malaysia. So, you know, having select committees can speed up change and reform in the country. So we've seen it happen in Selangor over the last few years. It's time we replicate it at the federal level.
We have a text message from Ed, not about special committee, but about not about the select committee, but about something that I'm sure, you know, the audience might be wishing for. Ed wants to know, why are there so many potholes in PJ?
All right, Ed. I would say that I think we've covered this a number of times this year. We are still going through the Indah Water Sewage Pipeline project in PJ. Many roads in PJ are being dug up by the various package contractors for the sewage pipeline works. I would dare say 80 to 90% of every of these road defects are related to the sewage pipeline works. I'm happy to go down on a drive with residents. I've done it a few times. And happy to go on anyone on a drive with others to show you and to see these potholes. Most of this should not exist. They should be rectified straight away. It's an issue of road reinstatement. And in fact, this relates to what the Select Committee has done. We found this to be a problem. So, you know, when I sat on the Select Committee, sitting on the Select Committee on local government, we actually made a study on how contractors are supposed to reinstate the road after digging it up. So what I can see is a lot of these sewage contractors are not reinstating the road correctly. Now, I wish everything fell under the purview and power of the state government and local government, but in the road space, we have many services which are carried out by federal government entities. So sewage is one of that. Jabatan Perkhidmatan Pempentungan, JPP, is a federal government department that's the ultimate owner of this project. We've got Telecom, TNB also digging up the road frequently. But in the case of Petaling Jaya specifically, 80 to 90% sewage related. This project is going to go on for at least another year.
Okay, so you can look forward to this in 2017 as well, I'm sure. If you've got any other questions for Rajiv or about living in Petaling Jaya, about inhabiting Selangor, are there things that you wish we were doing better, you know, areas of your neighbourhood that you wish had improvements, the phone lines are open, the numbers are?
You can call 7710-9000. You can text us at 016-201-9000, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. So I guess the next segment that we wanted to go to is just to look back at some of the campaigns and initiatives that the Selangor State Government or maybe MBPJ have launched over the year and how effective they've been. One of the most popular shows that we did this year was the first one we did at the start of the year. It's the PJ Local Council's campaign to collect more outstanding traffic summons. And the way to go about this was to introduce a rebate and discounts for people who have summonses with overdue payments.
Yes.
Would you be able to tell us how the collection is going so far, and would something like this be something that we will see continue next year?
We talked about this in the beginning of this year, and I think there were a lot of callers calling in to voice dissatisfaction at such a discount scheme.
These are the ones who paid on time.
These are the ones who paid on time. I mean, I feel you because I'm one of those who pay on time, and I've paid a couple of DBKL ones on time just to hear. I think yesterday or day before DBKL announced that they're going to give a discount scheme. So, but in the case of PJ, it was supposed to be a one-off thing. We have not had any more announcements of it coming back again. Just to recap, the reason for this discount was to assist people to clear off their backlog before the blacklisting with JPJ started. So since the beginning of this year, MBBJ has already started blacklisting your road tax renewal with JPJ. This is still a manual process where MBBJ has to submit the information manually to JPJ. So some of you may have escaped. Even though you have summonses, you may have still been able to renew your road tax. But there have been plenty of people out there who have not been able to renew their road tax because of these unpaid MBBJ summonses. So that's happening. That's already, the blacklisting has already started. So if you have a pile of MBBJ summonses unpaid, you best clear it up as soon as possible, not just one day before your road tax payment. Then you get all panicky and you have to go scramble for that credit card to pay off the summonses. So no more discounts in the horizon for MBBJ on this.
One of the themes that came up out of that show was the concern that it might send the wrong message, right? It's saying basically,
yes,
do whatever you want and eventually we'll relent because we just want you to pay, so we'll give you a discount. How would you respond to that now that we're a year out of that?
Well, I think the pretty much the same response as I had when we first did this show. Unfortunately, the culture of having this summonses go without any further punishment has been ingrained for far too long, and a lot of people may have racked up 50-100 summonses because they never thought that the day of reckoning would come. And that's why there was this one-off grace period for you to clear that off. And after that, no more. So now onwards, no more such discounts. You've got to pay. Now, MBBJ has a system where if you pay early, it's a lower rate. So if you go and pay within the first week, you go to the counters and you ask for, they'll charge you 30 ringgit, and then it goes up to 50 ringgit, and finally up to 100 ringgit. So if you pay early, it's lesser than later. That's been the system in PJ for quite some time. But the principle of the matter is, you now have a secondary punishment if you don't pay. Last time, people may have crumpled summonses. Let's be frank, I think a lot of listeners out there, you know someone who have done this, just crumple summonses and throw it away, ignore it and say, nothing's going to happen to me. You get very worried with police summonses.
Yes.
You pay that because you know that's going to affect your road tax renewal. But local council summonses, most people don't care. So now PJ has started this. And I hear KL is going to be doing this as well. And other local councils will eventually follow suit. So you got to start paying attention to your local government summonses.
Another popular show that we did, this one gathered a lot of media headlines because of its, I guess, ingenious way of going about solving a problem. It was in February when you launched a campaign to tackle the rat problem in PJ. You were offering a 3 ringgit for every rat that was caught and brought to, a
collection
point. Yeah. Yeah. How was that solution in retrospect?
So, in retrospect, no regrets. It has definitely helped to bring down the population as a one-off thing. But since then, MBBJ has been having regular enforcements on shops. They must have proper dustbins. You see, access to food waste is a very strong contributing factor to rats existing in commercial areas and for them to get nourished and to breed. And that must be curbed. And while the situation is not yet completely solved, we have seen now in PJ, a lot of shops have started complying and having proper dustbins. So ever since the campaign went on for that 2 months, that saw a tremendous reduction in rats. People were telling stories. They noticed the number of rats just running around, just having dropped. But the action after that, the making sure that the shops have proper waste disposal post-campaign that has been going on. I've got quite a number of irritated shopkeepers complaining to me. They don't accept being forced to have a proper dustbin because, you know, I've only got a few bags of rubbish. Why can't I just put them in a pile in front of my shop? And no can do. Not anymore, not in PJ. We want to move one step forward towards a cleaner city. So areas like, say, Section 14 PJ, where, you know, before this, you walk down the row of shops of Digital Mall and not many shops have a proper dustbin. Now, over 80% have proper dustbins, you know, with proper lids to keep the waste away from rats. So moving forward, this is not to do another 3 ringgit rat catching program, but moving forward is to keep up the enforcement for proper hygiene practices.
We have a caller on the line, a caller, Harry. Harry, can you ask your question?
Yeah, I live on 20 Stoke 2 Paramount Gardens, PJ. And 3 years ago, they replaced our drain. And during the replacement, I made a complaint to MPPJ stating the quality of the drain is very poor, because as the contractor was carrying it to put into the drain, some of the concrete broke, you know. If the quality is so poor, why want to replace? And then the old one was still good, a bit worn out, yeah. But the thing is that after replacement, I found that many of the gaps between the channels were quite wide, about 5 to 6 mm wide. Therefore, water is draining through the gap. Okay, and my house is a 20 stop 2, it's a cantilever terrace house. And there's a chance that one day the erosion is so bad, my house or my row of houses would topple towards 1446. Are you familiar with my area?
Okay. Section 20 actually falls under my neighbouring constituency, Kampung Tungku. What I'll do is I'll communicate this with the local councillor and the state assemblyman for this area. Now, sorry?
YB Lau Ying San, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, I did a complaint also. And then from what I know now is MPPJ say they don't have budget to do it. My contention is I complained during the process. And they don't pay the contractor because he did not do a good job. But later I found out he already been paid. You know? Why pay a contractor if they didn't do a good job? And today, all the drain that were replaced has already worn out. I also made a complaint to Gandhi Mati, the councillor of MPPJ. His rat came to have a look, take pictures. But to today, no action, you know? So that's what my, that's the worrying part for MPPJ. You have a PJ Aduan, but nobody is reading it. Nobody is taking action, you know.
Thank you, Harry. Thank you, Harry. We hear you loud and clear.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Thanks, Harry, for that information. I'm glad that you've already communicated this to your local councillor. What I'll do is, after this show, I'll touch base with your local councillor. Maybe something is in progress on this matter. But in general, contractors should not be paid for shoddy work. If they perform shoddy work, they should redo it back properly, or the council should terminate them without payment and hire a different contractor to get the work done properly. So if it's really true that this contractor was paid, I'm happy to write an official complaint to the audit department and audit committee in MPPJ to investigate the officer who signed off on this payment. But offhand, I am not very sure if this is the case where the contractor has been paid. Numerous contractors have not been paid for their shoddy work done in PJ.
One of the themes that I'm noticing from January and February is that it's sort of a short-term solution to a long-term problem, with acknowledgement, of course, of the long-term problem. Do you think that we're hitting a point now where we can start doing long-term, non-sexy solutions? Is the public ready for that? You know, are we ready for non-sexiness?
I think the non-sexy solutions have always been in the works. It's just non-sexy, so we don't talk about it much. But things like enforcement against shops who do not have proper dustbins, like what we talked about a couple of minutes ago, that has been in the works all year, but we don't have much conversation on this. I think many shopkeepers may be very annoyed with this, but will not take to the press to complain, because it's quite a losing battle for them to do so. So there are a continuous enforcements of such kinds, and continuous non-sexy long-term solutions that are happening. We just may not be communicating them very well.
We'll continue this look back at news that has been affecting local governments across Selangor after this short market update. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. Welcome back. You're still listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chuan Teck, joined in the studio by Lee Tree Lin. Our guest today is Bukit Gasing State Assemblyman Rajiv Rishikaran. Lin, you have some texts.
I do. One of which is about we need an overhead bridge at Armada and TNB near Amcot Mall for better flow of traffic.
Oh, yes, especially at the Armada one. I've proposed that to MPPJ and will continue to follow up with MPPJ on this matter. Definitely need that near Armada.
Another comment is, are we able to pay MPPJ summons online? Because it's difficult to find the time for walk-in payment.
Yes, you can pay them online. I've done it myself. And yes, I do get summoned by MPPJ when I park wrongly.
Is there a payment, like an installment plan for people who have run up like maybe thousands of ringgit in summons?
Online, no. But if you go into the office, I'm sure MPPJ can negotiate some sort of payment plan.
I holidayed in Setiawan. I found it very clean. But in Klang, where I actually am, piles of rubbish are still seen in tamans and drains are clogged where the shops are. Please.
All right, if you are using a smartphone in Klang, please download our iClean app on your smartphone and just snap a picture of this when you see and lodge a complaint. They're supposed to get things rectified within 24 hours. So the state government has rolled this out in Klang and soon will expand this to the rest of the state. I'm sorry that your part of Klang is still facing these problems. We're working towards getting all parts of Selangor cleaner.
Coming back to our roundup, in April, there was news about new regulations surrounding food trucks and where they are able to operate legally. Are regulations on food trucks operators now clearer since then?
Yes, regulations are crystal clear. In fact, in PJ, not only are the regulations out for public consumption, you can get these at MBPJ, but MBPJ has also marked out 90 bays throughout PJ City for food truck operators. So if you are interested in operating a food truck, you can head on to the licensing department in PJ. These 90 bays are in over 30 locations in the different parts of PJ, and you can apply for one of these spots. So your food truck needs to meet a certain minimum criteria. Basically, we want to make sure food hygiene is well maintained on these food trucks. And as long as you meet this criteria, you can apply for one of these food truck bays. And 90 is a start. Looking, and I'm discussing with councillors to expand, especially the areas in my constituency of Bukit Gasing. I see a few opportunities that we can place a bit more food trucks. So that 90 may increase next year. But for now, the 90 is already available and open, and people have applied. And if you're listening out there and you're interested, go ahead and apply for one of the spots.
A message now. I've complained about badly timed traffic lights to MPPJ, but nothing's been done. Traffic lights in PJ tend to be the cause rather than the solution to traffic jams.
Well, I would definitely want to see that fixed. If you could maybe text in the specific location of these badly timed traffic lights, I would be happy to bring this up with the engineering department of MPPJ.
The number to call again if you have any question is 77109000, or you can text us at 016-201-9000 or tweet us at BFM Radio. So going green has been a theme of the Selangor government in the past few years. And this year, during the fasting month, we did a show on the various campaigns to phase out the use of polystyrene. What is the status of the enforcement thus far?
Actually, I'm impressed. If you go around the Medan Selera's in PJ, a lot of the hawkers have switched their packaging and are no longer using polystyrene packaging. So some are using the plastic boxes, some are using hard paper boxes, some are using the ones that look like polystyrene but are actually the biodegradable versions. It's actually quite impressive. I'm sure most of you who buy food in PJ would have realized that we successfully made the switch. Easily more than 90% of our our food stall operators have made the switch in PJ. So I think that's one positive switch that we've made. Hopefully, when it comes to parking, we can replicate such success.
We have a message from a listener. I'm not sure if it's the same one as before, but I think responding to this call for tell us where the bad traffic lights are. The junction on the road from Putrajaya to KLIA and the road to Dunkill Town, the traffic light is always causing very bad jam and there's always motorists jumping queue.
Okay. I hope you would have complained to the respective local councils on that, because that will not be under MPPJ. But okay, we take note of that information and we'll forward it on to the Sepang Municipal Council.
River lover Ganesh says, "Dear sir, many of our rivers are polluted. What is the government's action taken to clean them?"
Wow, this is definitely a tough question. In next year's budget, there is an amount allocated to further improve the cleanliness of our rivers, but it's a Herculean task. It's going to take many years for us to get there. We've got two big problems to deal with. The first is our habits. When you litter far away from the river, not just near the river, but when you litter on the roadside, what happens is that rubbish tends to wash into a drain when it rains, and then that drain washes into a river. And the source of the rubbish that you see in the river are not just the people who throw plastic bags of rubbish into the river, although that does happen, but also the rubbish that are thrown 2-3 kilometers away from the river ends up in the river. So we've got a lot of rubbish traps in our rivers today that may not have been there 10 years ago to try to filter out this rubbish, but it's a Herculean task to get the rubbish cleaned out. The second problem is wastewater discharge. Now, this is going to be an even tougher problem to overcome. A lot of houses are discharging wastewater into your drains, and that ultimately flows into the river. So, you know, if you're in your house, your kitchen, your toilets, not just your toilet bowl, but every source of water, wastewater in your house, should actually flow to your indoor water system. It should not flow into the drain at all. But when we have wastewater from your kitchen flowing into your drain, all this food waste, grease, oil, it may be very little coming out of one house, but cumulatively over a million houses, it adds up, and that makes the Klang River very polluted, as well as all the branch rivers. So the easier things to fix are making sure that all the indoor water plants are upgraded so that they don't discharge polluted water into our rivers. So that's underway right now. But I foresee a very difficult task in going house to house to make sure that you stop discharging wastewater. For as long as we keep doing that, tackling river cleanliness is going to be a challenge. Right now, the effort is on factories, especially with the recent pollution cases. A lot of the efforts by the state government and local councils has been on making sure factories do not discharge pollutants into the river. But at some point, we've got to go to the shops, and then we've got to go to the houses, and then we will get to a state where we see nice, clean rivers that we can actually swim in.
Another show that we did in July, this is in conjunction with, this one is a top downloaded podcast, and it was in July when the LRT2 just began operation, and you were talking about this pilot transit-oriented development initiative that was launched in PJ. How is it going?
So what we have seen in PJ right now is Section 13 is going to be some sort of example of moving us towards a more walkable city, a more public transport friendly portion of the city. Section 13 is going to be massively upgraded. We're going to redo the roadscapes, basically from fence to fence of the building. We're going to change how the road looks like to put in more pedestrian walkways and space for future cycle tracks. And that has been in the planning works this year. So we've had consultations with the building owners and also the resident associations around the area. And MPBJ has just moved forward with the first phase. The first phase is to put in pedestrian walkways in Section 13. So two consultants have been hired to design the detailed drawings, and then soon a tender would be called and contractors be appointed. So we'll, for our first step, we'll see pedestrian walkways being laid all over Section 13, making it easier for people to be more public transport friendly, not just car friendly. So we're making progress on that. We've got to move into second phase and bring in more buses. Now, we have also already laid out the 106 feeder bus routes that we need in PJ. SPAD has not approved this 106 bus routes. I urge SPAD publicly today to quickly approve the 106 bus routes. Now, SPAD doesn't have to give us the license if it feels that it should go to Rapid KL. That's fine with me. It doesn't matter to me which bus operator gets the license. What is really, really important is that these 106 bus routes that have been identified by our consultants are implemented so people can move around easily, quickly by public transport.
We have two callers that we want to get through very quickly.
Looks like we lost this caller.
Let's try the next one. Hello, you have a question?
Hello?
Yes. Hi, is this Bobby?
Yes.
Do ask your question.
Yeah. Hello, good afternoon, Mr. YB.
Hi, good afternoon.
Oh, okay. I'm living in Section 10 PJ.
All right.
I understand that was a proposal, you know, the traffic light near the satellite restaurant.
Okay.
May I know what is the status, please?
All right. So this has been brought to MPPJ's attention. We have not... I don't think MPPJ has come to a decision on this, on this traffic light. There will be always an additional burden on the road when we have too many traffic lights. But I do understand why a traffic light is needed at this particular junction near the satellite restaurant on Jalan Gasing. So MPPJ is... seriously considering this, and we'll continue to follow up with MPPJ to let's try to make the best outcome for Jalan Gasing. We don't want a Jalan Gasing that is clocked with a traffic light every 100-200 meters, but at the same time, we do understand the people that need to get out and take too long to turn right coming out of your house. So that is still one of the things that is a work in progress.
Okay, we have one more minute left. Perhaps we can end on what message which I'd like to leave listeners with as we look forward to 2017?
Well, we started off with this question. We are ending with this question. One thing I really have for my personal wish for 2017 is that we can improve our delivery services across the various departments that we have in this country. I think Malaysians deserve better. We deserve departments that work more efficiently, who deliver the outcomes from rubbish collection to road maintenance to playground maintenance, streetlights, and so on. So that would be my biggest wish for 2017. There are a lot of incredible, hardworking civil servants out there. I'd like to say thank you to all of them, and hope we get more of that on board. So thank you very much. Wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
And that was Rajiv Vishakaran. Thank you so much for coming in. You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.